Ladies and gentlemen, I don't chase people to come on the show because everybody wants to do the show. But I've chased this gentleman because I have become a fan, a genuine fan. Now, you see television programmes about hotels and restaurants, and to me, they're absolutely, it's too much. It's over the top now. But all of a sudden, somebody's come up with the most amazing concept, amazing hotels. I then see this gentleman, who is a respected journalist, a food critic, a very knowledgeable man, and we've just found out another side to his talent. What a great presenter, Giles Corran. Hi.
Hi. Wow, that is gushing stuff. You can't possibly mean it all.
I do. I genuinely mean it. And I mean, I've never met or spoken to anyone who's had a wet kiss of a giraffe before.
Yeah, no, that was that's one of those things which, if you're presenting a TV show, they go, and now it's time for you to kiss the giraffe. And I think, in your dreams, pal. And I think, well, actually, come on, this is going to go on TV and people will have to talk about stuff, I guess, because it's outside of my comfort zone. It's not something I would do. I'm not one of those people who is genuinely up for it. I'm not game for a laugh. I'm a miserable bugger to be in my company mostly. But when you're in a situation like that, you've got to give it a go. And, you know, it is not pleasant. You could Google it. You could YouTube it now. The gigantic tongues they have that roll out about a foot long. And they pluck a kind of muesli nut out of your mouth and with this great drooling saliva, which sometimes, you know, the giraffe peels away and you're still joined to it by a 10-foot strand of saliva. Yeah, not pleasant. But people pay thousands of pounds and travel around the world to do it.
They do indeed. BBC Two have really pulled it out of the bag for me. I think it's an amazing programme, amazing hotels. Giles, you must be pleased that your name's put to a programme like this.
Yes, well, I mean, it does turn out to be brilliant. I mean, you never really know. They started out, and they came to me and said, we're going to do this hotel show. Do you want to do it? And I went, yeah, of course, brilliant. Just saw myself kind of bouncing on beds and calling the room service and testing the minibar and saying, oh, this is lovely, and jumping in the pool. I didn't really know what it was, but I thought, I'll go for it. And Monica was the same. Monica Galletti was the same, and she said, she'll be co-presenting it with you. And off we went, and we mucked in, and they gave it. That was the first surprise. We had to work. So Monica had to work in the kitchen, and I had to clean windows and drive cars and buggies and deliver things by plane. And I thought, and it was quite hard work. We both, Monica and I, missed our families, and we were going, we'll never do this again. We won't do this again. And I said, yeah, but let's work and watch the show, because you never know. Maybe the show will be brilliant, and people will love it, and we'll have to do it again. And sure enough, I watched the show, and I thought, it's brilliant. And people did love it, and so we are doing it again.
As a foodie person yourself, you've seen a million programmes now, and I think it's getting too saturated in point, for me anyway. It's like filling television. Yeah. But this is, it's something, for those people that haven't watched this, I promise you, I'm a gushing person anyway, and when I love something, I love it. But it is so unusual, because you see the hotel, but then you go behind the scenes with you, and things stick in your mind. The one hotel, when they went out in safari, how does he keep his chickens alive to get the eggs in the morning? It's that sort of television. It's different.
Well, it was. I mean, that was one of those things, wasn't it? It's a luxury hotel in the middle of nowhere. It's out in the outback of Africa, in the veld, out in the Samburu. But you know, premium punters expect to get their eggs Benedict in the morning, and they had this problem. You can't deliver eggs because it's 14 miles by road, bumpy, 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 bumpy roads all the way. All the way they do it, the eggs all smash. It's too expensive to fly them, so you have to try and keep chickens, but it's not natural habitat chickens. And yeah, we were trying to protect this chicken. Anyone, people these days, sometimes people keep chickens in cities, you get the odd urban fox. The problem here was lions, jackals, hyenas, leopards. The sort of fat Texan tourists who come in and give not a second thought to their egg benefits in the morning, that the trouble that we've gone to bring them that egg, all the things that are normally straightforward in life become incredibly complicated. As they did, we were in the cloud forest in Ecuador, where the mold grows on the walls before your very eyes. I was just sort of helping out with the maids, with the housekeeping. So I was sort of scrubbing mold off toilet walls for days, which is, frankly, as a fancy restaurant critic, and not a thing I'd ever given any thought to. But, it shows people a whole new world, doesn't it? It's the other side of Well, it's, as we say, life beyond the lobby. It's not what people normally see.
Giles, you're a columnist, a restaurant critic for The Times, food writer. Were you panicking that maybe you'd be savaged when you were doing it, as in the column inches?
I was. Well, you've got to be slightly try and be impervious to that. I was a little bit worried, and I was indeed savaged. The TV critic in the Daily Mail, who spent 10 years, I only have to open my mouth for him to savage me, pile on me. And he was saying I was like a spoiled 11-year-old boy. I needed a box round the ears. And I thought, well, pal, my dad used to box me around the ears when I was 11, and it got him nowhere. And this is how I am. Yes, I do worry. I took a beating on social media after the first, which was in Singapore. Now, although most of these shows are in difficult environments, in forests and mountains and islands and stuff, and I'm really involved in doing stuff and taking it all very seriously. In Singapore, we were in a giant corporate hotel owned by a corporation in Vegas. It was all with 10,000 staff, all very rigorous and regimented. And I thought it would be more fun to take the Mickey. So I larked about and took the Mickey. And for some reason, Twitter decided that I was a disrespectful, spoiled Englishman. And they did. They savaged me. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of people saying all the things that you said. Great show, but got to lose this guy. That was pretty depressing, because there's an assumption that if I dish it out, I should be able to take it. But I can't always.
Well, Giles, you've got a fan here in Liverpool. I'm telling you now, I genuinely can't fault the programme. I'm getting a bit stupid over this gushing business. I just love it. And I've swam in that pool. I go to Singapore every year and work over there for a week. And so I've swam in that pool.
You know, I never got to swim in the pool. We were working so hard that I never got to swim in the pool. I got to look at it. I got to take some photos. There was never actually 10 minutes spare for me to swim.
Where did the idea come from? Because it is so clever.
I think, it's hard to say. I mean, sadly, I can't claim that it was me. I think, well, the thing you said, we've had all these food shows for so long. For many years, factual TV, particularly at BBC Two, has been food. I had a career in it. I did some food shows, but I'm kind of bored with watching them too. And I think there'd been a thought in the BBC that it's time for travel again. We haven't had travel shows for ages, since the days of Judith Chalmers and Wish You Were Here, and you know, and there was sort of Alan Wicker and stuff, but really travel had died away. And they thought maybe there's a way to bring it back. They came up with this, and they are hoping that this will do for travel as a kind of public interest thing, what shows like MasterChef and The F Word did for food. Yeah. It does seem to have caught a light. I was amazed. I can't help being on social media when it's being broadcast to look what people are saying. Just everybody saying, wow, what an amazing hotel. You know, got to go there, got to try, got to save up for a lifetime. Have you seen this hotel? I had no idea people were so fascinated by hotels, but they do seem to be.
Yeah, but don't forget, they can't go there. An awful lot of people just have to dream. I mean, you mentioned Judith Chalmers. I ignored that. But Wicker. Now, Wicker. I grew up with Wicker. I mean, I'm a 71-year-old man, so I lived for my weekly dose of Wicker. So I'm sure people are taking this with the hotels, because you also show people, what I loved about the programme from the beginning, you show people's dreams. That guy in the Amazon, his dream, his magic, and he's putting back into society. He's helping the villagers. Same in Nairobi. I just love it.
Yeah. Well, they are people who are sort of facilitating dreams, and it's dreamers on both sides. There's the dreamers who bring these hotels to life, and there's the dreams that people might have of going to them. And they're not just fancy five-star. They are places which, you know, provide a real experience. And yes, I mean, people aren't going to go to them. That's true. I review restaurants. I review a lot of fancier restaurants. I know that people are mostly not going to be able to afford them. But a lot of people manage to get around to one trip of a lifetime at some point in their life when they retire. However expensive these places are. I mean, some of them are ridiculous. Morocco was the hotel was owned by the king, and it was thousands and thousands of pounds. But you know, if somebody wants to spend a few nights in a cloud forest in Ecuador, then, you know, there's always a thing you can hope for doing. You can hope to do it eventually.
It was interesting you said then about Morocco. £35,000 you quoted at the top end per night. I just was stunned by that.
Well, yes. I mean, in a programme like that, we have to try and find a figure. People want to put numbers on them. I mean, the truth of that place is, They were a succession of riads, which are in North Africa and the sort of Arab world. That's a kind of, it's a house in itself built around a courtyard. And the hotel was made up of 15 or 16 of these. And the biggest one, and bear in mind, this was built originally by the king of Morocco, to house his sort of dignitary friends when they were in Marrakesh. And he thought, oh, well, when it's not being used, we could use it as a hotel. But some of these places, these are places that are designed where literally the queen and her retinue would all go. These are, and they would normally be guests of the king. What they're doing is putting a price on, well, if you as a private person, billionaire, want to come here, well, we're going to say it's £35,000 a night. Yeah. It's not like it's full every night with people spending £35,000. It's on the rare occasions that someone might come along. Yeah. That's what they'll charge them. But it will be some crooked potentate, some president of a tin pot republic who's, you know, ill-gotten funds will be spent on it. I mean, it's not people like you or me or even remotely like us.
Tell me, how long did it take to film from beginning to end?
Well, each film took a month to make. But for each one, Monica and I were only there for a week. So they were there filming for 4 weeks. And in a week towards the end, we then went out and they set everything up and we filmed it. So there were six of them. So in theory, there were cameras rolling for 6 months.
Wow.
And then what with the editing and everything, it would have taken a year, but the BBC liked it so much that instead of putting it on in autumn, the original plan, yeah, they brought it forward and put it on now. I think you can say start to finish a month. I'm hoping in series two, which they have commissioned, we might be able to do it a bit quicker.
Tell me, did you know Monica before?
No, I had never met her. I had never met her before.
Magic. Well, you've got a real magic chemistry on screen. Loved it.
Well, it was, yes, it does. It did seem to have worked out very nicely. We were literally introduced in a sort of in a cafe a few weeks before we went out, just to see if it was all right. This was their sort of choice. This was who they wanted to present their series, and they just sort of bet that it would be okay. She's obviously very famous from doing MasterChef, but she had a bit of a. I was quite daunted to meet her because she has this quite scary. This scary image, this sort of tattooed Samoan lady with the peroxided hair, you know, and she's always mean to people about their cooking. And in the life, she's absolutely charming and lovely.
Have you ever been mean to her?
To Monica, I wouldn't dream of it. I'm always very nice to the ladies. That's very, very important. Always very charming. No, she was, and au contraire, she sort of bossed me rather. She was sort of more off taking the mickey because... Mm. You know, she comes from this world of she's a hard-working professional chef, 20-hour shifts all her life. And the way that chefs regard namby-pamby critics like me, who just swan about and come in and eat and sound off and get paid far too much money and, you know, think too highly of ourselves. She was pretty tough on me most of the time.
If you've just joined us, I'm talking to Giles from Amazing Hotels, which is a BBC Two series, which is incredible. Let's just go back to Morocco for a while and speak about your warmth when you went to the family home. I saw another side of you, which was nice, because I've read your reviews, I've read some of your stuff in your columns, but I'd never seen you, and you really didn't do yourself any harm when you went to that home.
Well, it was a fascinating trip to make. That wasn't it wasn't sort of planned or scheduled originally for the filming. I was dressed up as a butler filming with Mohammed, going around as he and buttering to these rich guests, and it's a full on service they provide. And he was working so hard. He had sort of cold sores from tiredness and red eyes, practically held open with matches, working so hard. And I had this sense he was being exploited a bit. And we were cleaning out a fire or something, or polishing some stuff. And I said, well, where does this come from, this work ethic? And he said, well, growing up, my mum used to, you know, my dad wasn't around, and I used to have to clean the house, and my mum expected it, and I'd get beaten if I didn't keep the house all clean and tidy. And I just said, really, would I be able to? Is this house still there? Yes. Who lives in it? My mother and father still live there. Could I come and see it? And he said, yes, of course, I'd like to invite you. So just out of nowhere, off we went. And it was an extraordinary place, the kind of a village that I would never see. You would never see it on the tourist trail. Not particularly beautiful and picturesque, very, very poor. Quite a long way out of Marrakesh. People travel hundreds of miles to work in places like that. A practically third world country. And then they were just lovely. Didn't speak a word. They didn't even speak Arabic. They spoke Berber. So even though we had an Arabic translator, couldn't speak to them. And they were an elderly Muslim couple in their sort of late 70s, early 80s, you know, lived hard lives. But they were just charming and sweet. And I at the advice of one of our local fixers, I took them a leg of lamb, which is a rare treat in that part of the world, and they were very happy with that. Mm. And I got to meet them all. The thing you didn't see was all the sisters, all Muhammad's sisters, because all the women folk, with the exception of his mother, weren't allowed to be on the camera, and they were all in a sort of back room sitting there in that, you know, that very strict division of male and female that you get in the Islamic world. And I was allowed to go in and talk to them, although not to shake hands or anything. And they asked us not to film them. So
it was a very human person. It was lovely.
An eye opener for me, and it was just nice for me to sit there and soak up something like that rather than be in a sort of fancy environment that I'm normally in.
What's your favourite episode?
There's one on Fogo Island off Newfoundland, which was pretty mad. I mean, just exciting. It's very fascinating, put it up your part of the world, because it's Newfoundland is very, very Irish. It was sort of 400 years ago, 500 years ago. It was mostly Irish from Liverpool going out in the direction of the New World. The first place they got to was Newfoundland, and they all still speak there with a sort of an Irish accent. And they have the way they sing and dance and party and the stuff they drink. It's like what America would be if it had been conquered by the Irish rather than the British or the Spanish. It's a kind of Irish empire, and just a fascinating place, which is rarely seen on TV. So I think that one's brilliant. I mean, but for sheer exoticness, I suppose the Africa trip was the most exciting.
Tell me, have you savaged any restaurants up this way lately?
I'm very careful up that way. I'm very careful when I'm out of London, because I'm wary of being a sort of snooty metropolitan critic. No, the last time I was up that way, I tweeted that I was coming. I was sort of on my way to, I can't remember exactly where I was going, but I'm on my way to Liverpool, and where I might have lunch at this place. And I got an awful lot of people telling me to turn around and go home in no uncertain terms. and I hadn't even said anything yet. I think there was just an anticipation that I was coming to be mean. And funnily enough, on Twitter, a young lady, a designer who works in Liverpool, said, "Oh, no, I'll tell you a good place to go." And I met up with her, and we went out there. And I tweeted, if anyone's got a problem, come. I'm going to be in this pub at this time. Come down and tell me to my face. I gather that's called offering them out. That's what I was told anyway. And nobody came. So I think I have a pretty untarnished reputation.
So, Giles, I'm out of step with the rest of Liverpool then. Because I'm a fan.
I don't know. No, they weren't literally not my... I think it was just my attitude. Right. I think I was making out like it was such a big deal that I was leaving London, and where should I go and have lunch?
Right.
And they were going, well, if you haven't already decided, then you bog off back home.
I was just going to say, as a journalist, you've seen huge changes because of social media.
People can get to us in the way they couldn't. I mean, part of the change is the fact that, when you write a piece, it's online and people comment on it, and you can choose to look at it or not look at it. But then they come at you via Twitter, and you have to engage in a debate in a way that you didn't used to have, which is sometimes is exciting and sometimes it's terrible. I mean, you have to, as a journalist and a broadcaster, I have to live with the fact that I am told day in, day out by people who think I'm not doing a good job exactly what they think. Yeah. And I will get endlessly saying, "Oh, you presented that show, it was rubbish. You wrote that piece, it wasn't funny." And I think I'm getting this from a who are you? You're a nurse or a dustman or a solicitor. I don't come into your house and tell you you've done a bad day's work. Yeah. But somehow as a broadcaster or a writer, you're expected to have to listen. Unless you have a strong constitution, it can be quite depressing.
Well, Giles, I can't thank you enough for the entertainment you've given me on Amazing Hotels. I'm thrilled to know there's a new series, and I think you should be congratulated. You and Monica, I think, have done an amazing job. It's on BBC Two, and I love it. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much.